we inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you with us on the program. Walker Wildman here. It's our live edition of the program. And we've got a jam-packed show full of content and guests in the second and the third segment. Good to be with you today once again on this edition of At the Core. The show is hosted each week by myself and Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. We host the show each week here on American Family Radio. If you want to subscribe to the podcast, you can do so by simply typing in the name of the show, the name of the podcast. And we're on all the various platforms. Just type in At the Core and then click the subscribe button. And we'll be queued up in your library each and every day. Well, turning our attention to the scriptures to kick off our program, Psalm 147 is where we are this week. Verse 2 and 3, the Lord builds up Jerusalem. He gathers the outcast of Israel. He heals the brokenhearted and binds up their wounds. Might as well read verse 4 too while we're here. He counts the number of stars. He gives names to all of them. That's 2 through 4 in Psalm 147. Well, what I notice here, you know, last week we were talking about miracles and how each and every one of us experience a miracle when we receive salvation, because to receive salvation is to defy sin and death, and to defy sin and death in human terms, my friends, is a miracle. But verse 2 here talks about the Lord building up Jerusalem, how he gathers the outcast of Israel, but he's talking there about the Jews, the Israelites, being returned to their homeland on a multitude of occasions, by the way. But the mere regathering of the Jews back to Jerusalem on the multiple occasions in which that has occurred, that in and of itself is a miracle. When you look at the foreign adversaries that have raided the land of the Bible and basically captured it, to have the Jews now in 2025 to have a Jewish state called Israel is phenomenal. It's a miracle. So Psalm 147 verse 2 talks about that. And then you see where the Lord counts the number of stars. And if you say, I just can't believe that God can count the stars. Well, he created them, didn't he? It also says in Scripture that he counts the number of hairs on our head. You should try that next time and see how that goes for you. But we do serve a miracle working God, and Psalm 147 is indicative of that, or displays that. Well, in the time that we have this segment, I do want to make sure we get to some stories. One more housekeeping item before we do get to our stories is I want to keep promoting our Activate Summit coming up this summer. June 12th through 14th are the dates. Activate Summit 2025 coming up June 12th through the 14th. We would love to have you join us. Just simply go over to activate.afa.net, activate.afa.net to check out all the information and the pricing for the Activate Summit coming up in June of this year. Well, the headlines over the weekend were the tariffs that President Trump put in place for Canada and Mexico. And, you know, should we be surprised? Absolutely not. I mean, this was a core campaign tenet of President Trump's campaign. So we shouldn't be shocked that he's deploying tariffs, right? I mean, he said he was going to do this. I think what's fascinating is this response to tariffs, right? There's a lot of people that, like in conservative circles, that they just can't stand tariffs. I mean, they absolutely can't stand it. And these are your quote-unquote free market people that just can't stand the idea of tariffs, right? And I hang out with some of them, and they just bash tariffs. Tariffs are a tax on the consumer, is what they say. And that's a half truth. Tariffs are only a tax on the consumer if the producer, the foreign producer, raises the prices in response to the tariffs and passes the price increase onto the consumer. That's the only way that it's a tax on the consumer. But what also is a tax more Importantly, is the income tax, which is completely unconstitutional. And I don't hear any of them getting upset about the income tax, which the income tax is like a young child when it comes to age compared to tariffs. Tariffs are like a mature adult. They've been around since the 1700s. So if you got a problem with tariffs, you got a problem with George Washington because he signed the Tariff Act in 1789. But enough of that. Let's play a clip here. This is National Economic Council advisor, our director, rather, Kevin Hassett. He's actually a first Trump term policymaker, very smart gentleman. And so here's Kevin Hassett on how Canada and Mexico trying to dig in their heels on this tariff fight and this policy fight is just an unfaithful move on their part. Clip one.
This is really more of a negotiation to try and say, no, we want more focus on the border. And if you give that to us, these go away.
This is not what I'm saying. People need to read the executive order. President Trump has said this is about the fentanyl crisis, right? No, but so I don't know how somebody reads the executive order if you're Canada and then comes back and says, we're going to start a trade war. We're saying we're really, really serious about going after fentanyl, and President Trump means it. And so there's all this fentanyl shipping across the borders. There in the past have been caravans of people parading across our border, carrying drugs and other things. And the response of our neighbors has not been, hey, we're going to help you stop this problem. It's go ahead and build a wall. So imagine, Becky, if I had like all this stuff going on in my house next to yours and all this stuff was leaking into your property. And then you say, Kevin, you got to stop all that crime in your place. And I'm like, hey, you know what? Becky, build a wall. That's disrespectful. This is the attitude the president has towards what's going on right now. He wants them to be respectful of the United States and help solve the problem rather than feed it.
So we've made a lot of progress with the Mexicans.
All right. So that's actually a very good analogy there. Folks, the only reason Trump has to deploy tariffs is because Mexico and Canada are completely unserious about the problem. Well, why didn't he negotiate with them before the tariffs? Well, because they're completely unserious about the problem. All right. This is not new stuff. All right. Mexico and Canada have been permitting fentanyl across their borders for decades. And they've refused to do anything about it for a variety of reasons. And so the tariff stick makes them pay attention. Don't you understand? You're naive to think in the realm of foreign policy that just calling up your buddy in Canada or Mexico or your gal in the Mexico case, that just giving them a phone call and saying, hey guys, you really need to get your act together is going to fix it. To think it's that simple is to either not fully understand what's going on or to be completely naive or both. And the moral outrage about tariffs is one of the most disingenuous, lowly educated arguments I've ever seen in my life. Because if you've got a problem with tariffs, you have a problem with George Washington. And if you have a problem with George Washington, well, I can't help you with that. And it's one thing to say, look, I just think we need to ditch tariffs. I just think the president shouldn't have the authority to do the tariffs. There are tax on consumers, whatever talking point you want to regurgitate. And if you want to have that position, it's America. That's completely fine. But you can't go after tariffs as a tax on the consumer and then like look the other way on the income tax, which is one of the most immoral taxes that's ever existed with mankind. Okay? So spare me the moral outrage on the tariffs. If we want to abolish anything, let's abolish the income taxes, which weren't even in our vocabulary until the early 1900s, okay? Some Marxists might have floated it in the 1800s, but income tax wasn't a thing until the 1900s. So if we're having to like pick where our priorities are and we want to agree on something, us conservatives, let's agree on abolishing the income tax. And then we can talk about tariffs. But it's a hard case to make, my friends, to get rid of tariffs. It's a really hard case to make. Not only were the founding fathers 100% in favor of it because it was a primary revenue source for the federal government, but also if you remove the tariff authority from the president, then, folks, what leverage does he have in negotiating? What leverage does he have in negotiating? And good luck getting Congress to do anything on this subject, because Congress doesn't do anything ever productive. So the president having the tariff power is perfect. It's beautiful. It works great. President Trump's using it, and Mexico's already backed down. And this apocalyptic trade war talk, number one, and this is my soapbox for the day, and then we'll move on. Number one, what is a trade war? Like, somebody please explain to me, by definition with data, what a trade war is. Well, a trade war is when the president uses tariffs to force policy change. Okay, so America's been in a trade war since George Washington. So this isn't a new trade war. We've been in a trade war. It just depends on which country we're talking about. Well, Trump has, you know, whatever excuse you want to make. Biden was doing tariffs. Biden was doing tariffs on all kinds of things. So if the existence of tariffs equals a trade war, we were in a trade war when Biden was in the Oval Office. And I didn't see any headlines about a trade war when Biden was in the Oval Office. But Trump gets in there and wants to use tariffs. And all of a sudden, it's a, you know, apocalyptic trade war. And now the headline is that prices are going to go up. This is the Drudge. Drudge has gone south, by the way, and they've been this way for a while. But the new headline from the left is that car prices are going to go up. Gas prices are going to rise, which I don't believe either of those. We'll just have to see. Maybe I'm wrong. But how much did stuff go up under Biden? How much did prices go up under Biden? And if car prices go up, it's because the foreign manufacturers have increased the prices so they can pass on the tariff cost to you and me. Which, how incriminating is that for the producers? That's how much they respect us. They want to pass on their tariff cost to us, the consumer. We'll make the Americans pay for it, they said. It also raises a question about why on earth are we making American, quote-unquote, made vehicles in Mexico? Ford? Maybe GM? I don't know. So all of this stuff ends up being indicting on the main complainers, is my point. Well, if gas goes up, well, that's because Biden was importing a lot of oil from other places. And before Biden got in there, when Trump was in there, we were a net producer. We were a net exporter, actually. Which means that tariffs literally would have no effect on energy prices because we produce so much that we don't need anybody else's oil or natural gas, for that matter. But see, Trump's trying to get us out of the mess, and we're like drug addicts that don't want to get out of the mess. We just want to keep doing the same old broken thing. We want to destroy the middle class. We want to tax the middle class into oblivion. We want to not use tariffs because, I don't know, tariffs a bad word now. And we want to keep shipping our jobs overseas so that our kids and grandchildren don't have a manufacturing base, an industrial base to rely on for jobs. And the beautiful thing about it all is it's all falling on deaf ears, if we're being honest. All the left-wing outrage, all the women on The View that are squealing, Jim Acosta, which doesn't have a job anymore at CNN, and everybody else who's been anti-Trump, never in Trump, David French, Russell Moore, and all the other 10,000 people I haven't mentioned that have been parroting the same old anti-American, outdated, never Trump talking points, because they don't want to do anything to fix our country. They just want to complain about how big, bad, and mean Trump is. They are going into the realm of irrelevance. Nobody's paying attention to him anymore. Trump's team's actually fixing stuff. They're fixing stuff. And Washington and the media are just perplexed. They're fixing stuff, they said. We'll be back.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. Hey, just returned from the presidential inauguration of President Trump and Vice President Vance. And let me tell you something, folks. There's excitement in the air among millions and millions and millions of Americans who are ready for some common sense changes to come to our country. Guess what? We're going to Washington, D.C. again for our Spiritual Heritage Tour in June and September. We're over halfway full. If you want to go with us to see our nation's capital from a distinctively Christian heritage viewpoint, then you need to contact us. You need to go to wildmangroup.com, WILDMONgroup.com. We're also going to Colonial Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to Boston in October. For information on any of these tours, go to wildmangroup.com, WILDMONgroup.com.
At the Core podcast are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you with us today on the program. By the way, for anyone reading the headlines about the apocalyptic trade war, which is how they want to describe it, one more thing on this. So, to show how non-apocalyptic this is, the Mexico tariff, the two-way tariff there, has already been paused. It's less than 48 hours, right? Because these went into effect on Saturday. So we're less than 48 hours in, and Mexico and the U.S. have already agreed to pause them until March 1 so they can reach a consensus. So that's not even applicable now. And then Trudeau's going to come around. He has to, right? He has to. So this is mostly a negotiating tactic, at least on this topic, but tariffs also can be used long-term for other purposes as well to help lift up American sectors of the economy and suppress some of these foreign dumping of goods into our country. So the Mexico tariff is not even in effect. It's paused until March 1st because why? The Mexican president said she's going to come to the table and try to reach an agreement with the Trump administration. Moving on to our next topic, I want to introduce a good friend of the ministry and been on the program before, Jerry Angelo. He is CEO and founder of Vanguard Marriage and Family Advocates, and he's been working pretty intensely and for a couple of years now on National Marriage Week and getting that recognized in various states and municipalities around the country. Hey, Jerry, welcome back to the program.
Hello, Walker. Thanks for having me. It's great to be back.
Absolutely. So we've been working with you and your wife on all things marriage related for a couple years now. I know you and Dr. Jameson Taylor are pretty good friends and have worked together on various policy items. But one thing that you're highlighting is National Marriage Week. And if you would have asked me a couple years ago, I didn't even know National Marriage Week existed. But it does, and it does for good reason. So tell us a little bit about National Marriage Week.
Sure. Yeah. National Marriage Week's actually been around for several years, and we kind of, I saw it several years ago when we were early on in our ministry, but it didn't quite catch my attention until recently. And so we just felt like the call of the Lord that we needed to use this as a tool to elevate marriage and edify marriage and bring awareness to the value that good marriages have on society. And we celebrate it every year, February 7th through the 14th. And so hopefully we'll be, you know, just like last year, we'll be get back again next year talking about it just to, you know, bring attention to it. Because it really is an important point in Hebrews 13:4, where it said marriage should be honored by all. And so we want to bring awareness to God's word.
Absolutely. And this institution of marriage and the getting the culture and including the government to not just recognize it but promote it has broad implications, Jerry, because, look, marriage has been gutted and undermined by the cultural Marxist and by the government actors that don't want one man and one woman being the primary authority over children's lives because there's multiple reasons here. A lot of it's spiritual because they want government to be our God, right? That's kind of the political angle. But ultimately, it's spiritual because you can't, it's almost like the hatred for the Jewish people. You can't really explain in logical terms why there's this avid, you know, resistance to one man, one woman marriage because of how naturally good it is and the blessings that it brings about, unless you might describe things in spiritual terms. But talk a little bit about not just the culture, but government also weighing in on this and promoting one man, one woman marriage, about the implications of that.
Sure. You know, you're exactly right. You know, scientifically, naturally, God's design for marriage of one man, one woman, has been going on for thousands of years. And it's just, you know, the scheme of the enemy to distract and divide. So they want to divide us with these distractions and redefining, you know, God's plan. And again, it's this has been going on for thousands of years. And, you know, even with some of the other issues that are going on in family, that's just what the enemy does. He distracts and he divides. But a great tool that your local governments and your state can use is marriage proclamations that talk about the benefits that strong marriages have on our society. And it's a great tool of awareness, and a lot of people don't realize this is going on. So we're trying to do what we can to bring awareness to that. In fact, there's been several states already that have either signed marriage proclamations in the past and are currently signing them right now, like Oklahoma, Texas. We're waiting for one at this moment. They signed one last year as well. Virginia just came out with one. Mississippi and Indiana as well, we're waiting. And in Missouri, not only are we going at the state level, but we're also going after several counties in the state of Missouri, like Berry County, Greene County, Christian County. And those are some of those are large counties. And so, again, we are just trying to get the word out on that. And in fact, there's another state, Idaho, who has rejected the SCOTUS decision of Obergefell.
Yeah.
And that's quite an interesting development. Because the whole legislature voted on this, and they reject the Obergefell decision, and they're actually calling on the Supreme Court to restore their decision to reflect natural definition of marriage between one man and one woman. I think that's a kind of shocking a little bit in a good way.
Yeah, absolutely. And folks, I want you to kind of understand the implications of the proclamations to not use too many shuns in describing this, but the courts and the legislatures both, public perception is definitely a thing, right? It's maybe not the driving factor, but the courts and the legislatures around the country, they do look at, hey, what do the people think about this, right? Where is the cultural momentum? And unfortunately, the Supreme Court has even factored that in. And you can't maybe definitively prove that, but it's a fact that the courts do kind of move and sway depending on where the culture is, depending on what legal topic we're talking about. And so by doing these proclamations of National Marriage Week, and many, if not all of these proclamations, at least that Jerry's working on, specifically cite one man, one woman marriage. I know for sure the Mississippi proclamation says, like three or four paragraphs in, that one man, one woman marriage is the best environment for the raising and upbringing of children for the benefit of society. Basically, I'm paraphrasing, but that's kind of the one of many purposes behind the proclamations. Not only is truth getting out there, but it's also sending the signal that, hey, we're still not good with Obergefell. We're still not good with this same-sex quote-unquote marriage ruling from the Supreme Court. We're dissatisfied with it, and we don't think it's right. And the same type momentum was needed in order to overturn Roe v. Wade. So talk about the implications of Obergefell. People might view it as this like narrowly focused, two adults of the same sex can quote unquote get married or get a certificate by the state government, or the county. But that's the implications here, Jerry, are so much more broad as far as the effects on children and society.
Sure. You know, this is, the definition of marriage between one man and one woman, again, has been going on for thousands of years. And many of us who hold that truth to be a deeply held religious belief feel kind of persecuted on that front. And, you know, just like the overturning of Roe v. Wade, and sent that decision back down to the states, you know, we have the, you know, the quote, the law of the land that, you know, we can have base, you know, arguably any kind of definition of marriage, and I think that's too broad. I think this might be a situation where, we need to bring it down to the states and let the states have, you know, have their sovereignty on this decision.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. And the folks, the ramifications, and we're going to hopefully cover this more in the next coming months and years, but the ramifications for a quote, same-sex, quote-unquote, marriage, and I say quote-unquote because it's not true marriage. Only true marriage is what God says it is, and that's a man and a woman. But the implications here and the damage that's been done, not to just the two adults that are engaging in this sin, but also the children that are involved. Now with same-sex adoptions, it's just a tragedy. It's very, very sad, and I read horror stories all the time. Jerry, about what the children go through, the trauma that children go through, you know, not having one, you're depriving them of one of the parents. You're depriving them of either the mother or the father. And in some cases, Jerry, they're being deprived of both biological parents with these same-sex adoptions. And it's just a tragedy. But Jerry, let me ask you about you guys have made a lot of progress getting these proclamations done. I mean, you mentioned Oklahoma did it last year, but now you're looking at, you guys are working on multiple states. So how many do you expect to how many governors or legislatures do you expect to participate in this via proclamation maybe in the next few months?
Right. You know, with the election cycle and people transitioning over in January and then having National Marriage Week being on February, it's kind of challenging to wade through who's the right contact. So we're not stopping now. We are continuing to ask leadership of all states to sign on to this movement. And there's a lot of people out there that really support this. And it's just amazing to me. Again, there are some counties in Missouri, you know, they just kind of heard about it and started doing it on their own. And again, when I heard about Idaho and some, there are some other states, I think the Dakotas are also doing a similar process. And so it's very encouraging. And we're going to keep, you know, asking state leadership to join onto this movement. And if you are a person in leadership in your state, or maybe you're a pastor at your local church, you know, if you want to download a template that has a sample marriage proclamation on it, whether you're a pastor of a church, whether you're a county commissioner, or executive level at the state, you can download a template at marriageminute.org. Just look for the marriage proclamations there, and you can download it, modify it, and we would love to talk with you about that if that's something that you're interested in doing.
Absolutely. That's the marriageminute.org. Jerry, last question. The road to overturning Obergefell seems pretty difficult, to put it mildly, because of the cultural decay, the moral decay that we have as a nation. But just for a minute or two, talk about the importance of court rulings and the Supreme Court when it comes to shaping how people view the issues. Because a lot of people maybe think, well, it's just the Supreme Court, and, you know, what does it really matter? Who does it really affect? But the government, meaning the Supreme Court, giving the thumbs up on a very unnatural relationship is damaging, and it has ramifications for years to come.
That's right. And you know, this situation, it goes contrary to, again, the natural order and also even scientific data and evidence. And an inconvenient truth here is children do best with their natural mother and father, in a stable, healthy home where they're learning how to have good relationships. That's the best solution for the family and for those children. And, you know, they have kind of distorted that a little bit, but and they try to suppress that truth. And even the subject you were talking about previously to this, that's what the enemy does. We're distracting you with things that aren't true, and we're dividing people. And so we have to get the truth out there, and we have to show people, you know, what these truths are and how important they are. And we just have to keep focusing on that and educating people on how to have good, strong relationships. And yeah, that's our mission, is to do exactly that. We want to help pastors, churches, entrepreneurs, businessmen and women, state and local governments, you know, anybody that has an interest in having a strong society. We want to help equip them with evidence and skills-based programs and show them how to implement that in their local communities, because the way that our culture is going in the community is how our state and our nation is going to go. And so if we can continue to show people how to have strong marriages and families, we're going to have strong communities. And it's just a natural thing that will happen.
Absolutely. Well, we've been talking to Jerry Angelo. He's CEO and founder of Vanguard Marriage and Family Advocates. Hey, Jerry, tell our folks where they can check out your website and more information.
Absolutely. As Walker said, with Vanguard Marriage and Family Advocates, but a real easy way to find us is through marriageminute.org. That's a ministry that's supported by our nonprofit organization. And we also have a prayer ministry out there. So please check it out. Marriageminute.org. We'd love to hear from you.
All right, Jerry. Hey, thanks so much for your work, and appreciate you coming on.
Blessings. You as well. Thank you, Walker.
All right. Thanks, Jerry. That's Jerry Angelo, good friend of the ministry, and CEO and founder of Vanguard Marriage and Family Advocates. And the topic there was National Marriage Week, and we've got multiple governors signing onto this proclamation talking about one man, one woman marriage, and the benefits to society broadly are outlined in these proclamations. So we have to build momentum, folks, and public. We have to shift public sentiment towards natural marriage. And Lord willing, in due time, that will set up the stage and tee up the overturning of Obergefell, which has been a stain on our country, to the likes of Roe v. Wade and slavery, when it comes to directly contradicting what God's intent and design is for mankind. All right, folks, two segments down, one more to go. Walker Wildman here. We'll be back in a few. According to a recent study of hundreds of post-abortive women, 60% of women reported that they would have preferred to give birth if they had received more support from others or had more financial security. That's where preborn steps in. Preborn is there for women in their darkest hour, deciding between the life and death of their precious child. You see, the reality is women are being pressured to make this fatal decision and are being told that their babies are just a clump of cells. Preborn welcomes women with God's love and introduces them to the beautiful life growing inside of them, which doubles their baby's chance at life. When you support Preborn, you not only support women, you empower them. Your donation of $28 will help a woman make a choice that she won't have to regret for the rest of her life and gives her the ultimate blessing, life. Your love can save a life. Just dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, say baby, or visit preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you with us on the program. Once again, Walker Wildman here with you. Last segment now underway. To show how much our populace is in need of education, Newsmax has an entire article that is titled, "Is it legal for Trump to impose tariffs?" Question mark. So Look, I like Newsmax, and I'm partially joking here, but there's a lot of education that's got to take place, and so the question is: it legal for Trump to impose tariffs? Well, yes, it's it's probably one of the most legal things that have ever existed in our country's history since it's been around since inception. But it never hurts to educate the populace on our history, our tradition, and our Constitution. And, you know, I was reading up a little bit earlier about George Washington imposing tariffs. It used to be 5% on everything, everything that came in the country, 5% tariffs. That was what George Washington did. And it's been the tariff strategy has been deployed by every president since George Washington. So some have used it more than others, but it's been around since then. Moving on to a few other clips that I want to get to this this segment. The New Jersey governor, this was shocking, Governor Murphy out of New Jersey. He admitted it. He was at an event speaking and he admitted that he's harboring, I don't know whether this is true today on this Monday edition of the program, but it was true when this happened over the weekend. But the New Jersey governor admitted that he's harboring an illegal immigrant at his house. This was shocking. Let's listen to clip four.
Talking about, I don't want to get into too much detail, but there's someone in our broader universe who's immigration status is not yet at the point that they are trying to get it to. And we said, you know what, let's have her live at our house above our garage. And good luck to the feds coming in to try to get her.
That was the chief executive of the state of New Jersey talking about how he's harboring an illegal immigrant at his house. And you just wondered where the Democrats stood on this issue. Well, there you go, my friend. There you go. So it went from, we don't want to deport the women and children that are here because that's mean, to we're going to harbor them in our house. Wow. The Democrats truly have not learned their lesson. That was shocking. So if ICE shows up at the governor's mansion, I don't want to see the left-wing media lose it because Trump's sending ICE to Murphy's house. Well, because he just confessed to harboring a criminal. This is shocking. I can't believe it. You couldn't write a book this good. All right, let's jump to our next guest. Mary Holland is joining us now. Mary's chief executive officer at Children's Health Defense, and she's on with us to talk about the RFK Jr. confirmation and even some of the health-related topics that our nation is facing. Mary, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Well, we're trying to platform some people that either know RFK Jr. or have worked with him or at least work in the same arena because he needs some cover fire. Man, he's come under a lot of attack by some of these senators. And his confirmation vote is pending before the full U.S. Senate, although his hearing has already taken place. But, Mary, give us a little backgrounder as to your work and the organization that you currently run, Children's Health Defense.
Sure. So I have known and worked with Bobby Kennedy for about 15 years. He founded a group called Children's Health Defense that grew out of a previous group called World Mercury Project. He formed that in about 2018, called it Children's Health Defense. I came onto the board and onto the staff. I came onto the staff in 2019 and became president in, 2021. And Bobby left to run for president in 2023, almost 2 years ago. He now has nothing to do with the organization, but he is extremely devoted to improving Americans' health, especially children. He's a brilliant guy. He wrote about four books while he was at Children's Health Defense. He was involved in many, many lawsuits related to improving health, particularly during COVID. We did believe during COVID that a lot of the things that were done, the masks, the distancing, the testing, And the shots were not well thought through and didn't have sufficient science behind them.
Well, Mary, I'm just going to kind of like fire away at some of the hot button issues, if you will, regarding RFK Jr. and some of the positions he has taken and that many other people share as well. This is not, a lot of this stuff is pretty broadly supported. Maybe we just don't have the pharmaceutical industry on board. But let's talk first about the fluoride issue, the fluoride in drinking water, which is something, I'll be honest, I haven't studied up on this extensively. I know the general kind of arguments that are in favor of ditching the levels of fluoride that we currently have in our drinking water. I know Florida's Surgeon General has already taken action on this with various municipalities there. But give us kind of the high-level view, like the layperson view of the problem with the amount of fluoride that we currently have in all of our drinking water.
Sure. So it's a little similar to other issues where we've been told on television since we were children, fluoride is for strong, healthy teeth, and fluoride is good for you. But the reality is that fluoride is a toxic waste product from manufacturing. And they started adding it to the water in the United States and very few other countries after World War II. It was a waste product from manufacturing. And they said that it helped your teeth, but in point of fact, it causes a lot of skeletal problems, thyroid problems, and the most serious problem is it lowers IQ in fetuses and in young children. And it lowers it by a couple points, your neurological development. And so this has been a long-running dispute. But in this dispute, a group that we've supported in some ways, they sued the Environmental Protection Agency under a law called the TOXA law, TSCA law, the Toxic Substances Act, saying you're not providing truthful information, EPA, about fluoride and what it's really doing. And this is long-running litigation in federal court, and finally, this last year, the National Toxicology Program came out with a report that said, yeah, it's lowering IQ, it's causing problems with people's teeth, it's causing problems with bones, it's causing problems with thyroid, and it is an unreasonable risk. It should be, the EPA should change its warning labels on it. Now, as you mentioned, the Surgeon General of Florida, Joe Latipo, then said, this is medical malpractice for us to keep fluoridating the water. And one of the most important things is in Western Europe, they don't fluoridate the water and they don't have any more or less tooth decay than we have in the United States. So I do think there's now a national movement, and Bobby Kennedy has been behind this, to take the fluoride out of the water.
Mm. Yeah, it's something that, to your point, it really takes almost this resetting of your thought process to look at this objectively and look at it through this non-propaganda lens. Because to your point, it's just been pounded into our heads over and over again, like a religion almost, that we have to have fluoride in our drinking water. And so, I would just encourage Americans to take a step back and look at this objectively. And not just because some television commercial told me I had to do it.
Right, but it's more than just the television commercials. The Dental Association, the Centers for Disease Control, a lot of different players were telling us since I was a child, fluoride is good for you. You need it on your teeth. You need fluoridated toothpaste. And the truth is, the science now shows us from the government itself, the most reputable part of the government that studies poison controls, they're saying it's not good for you. It's an unreasonable risk. And so, we're turning around a ship. It's not going to turn all at once. But the turn has started, and that's great. The EPA is actually trying to decide now if they want to appeal this decision from a federal district court in California. I imagine they will not appeal it at the end of the day. The science is in, and it shows that the fluoride is not helping.
Let me ask you this, and I do want to get to the COVID shots and the liability protections for the pharmaceutical industry, but just to kind of put a bow on this topic of fluoride in drinking water, with some of these other issues, you can follow the money, right? You can say, all right, X company makes this much millions or billions, and clearly that's why they want this policy to stay in place, even though the science doesn't back it up. What's the connection, if any, with the fluoride issue. Like, is this like people just aren't paying attention to the science, or is this a money thing? Mm-hmm. What do you think is driving this?
Yeah, no, it's a money thing. It's the usual. So, you know, the toothpaste companies have been selling it with fluoride. They've been making these knowing misrepresentations. I think they're probably fearful in changing. Does that expose them to liability? The companies that have been selling this waste product, fluoride, to the water supplies, they're going to lose money. So there's a lot of money to be lost here. The dentists have been making money on fluoridated everything in their practices. And there's some data that shows that fluoride on your teeth are helpful, but in the water that you ingest, that you swallow, that is not helpful. So there's still going to be some fluoride products for cleaning your teeth when you go to the dentist if you want it, but there is a sea change that I think has already started to happen.
Absolutely. All right, let's move on to a couple of the topics. Once again, we're talking to Mary Holland. She's the CEO of Children's Health Defense. Mary, the liability protections for the pharmaceutical industry, this has been around for so long, but it was highlighted during the COVID pandemic, because we had just testimony after testimony of people being harmed by these COVID shots. And then you go to civil court and you just have nowhere to go. What can the FDA, is this something the FDA is going to be able to address, or is this something where we're going to have to get Congress involved, or both?
Right. So what you're referring to is that in 1986, Congress passed a law called the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act. And they recognized then that if we're going to mass vaccinate everybody with one-size-fits-all vaccines, some people are going to be injured, some people may die. We better have liability protection for the vaccine makers and for the doctors, all the healthcare practitioners that are giving these vaccines. So they put that into place in 1986. And lo and behold, when a product can be mandated by the states and when there's no liability for industry or the healthcare practitioners, the vaccine schedule exploded. To undo the 86 Act would take an act of Congress to repeal that law or to amend that law. But there are things that can be done in the interim to change the vaccine schedule. The state's vaccine schedules are based on federal recommendations from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. So they could change their recommendations, and that would make a big difference.
Absolutely. Well, we've got about 2 minutes left. To give us the case for RFK Jr., for Bobby Kennedy, being over HHS, because the Senate's headed to vote on his confirmation in the coming days, hopefully. But I'm fully supportive. I talked about this last week because of all of the corruption and problems in our health agencies, not to mention America's degrading health broadly, but give us kind of the 60-second case for RFK Jr. as the director of HHS.
Sure. So the organization takes no position, but I, as an individual, do support Bobby. You know, we're paying more for getting worse results than any other similarly situated country. Our life expectancy is about 8 years shorter than it is in Japan or Western Europe. 70% of people in the United States are obese. Most adults have a chronic health condition. Over half of American kids have a chronic health condition. We should all be invested in changing this reality. We should all want everybody to be healthier. And Bobby Kennedy's willing to ask the hard questions and to make the hard changes that the corrupt establishment that's been presiding over this for 40 years is unwilling to do. So I think we need fresh horses. We need new blood. And Bobby Kennedy represents that.
Absolutely. Well, Mary, thanks so much for coming on. Before I let you go, tell our folks about your website, Children's Health Defense.
Yes, our website is childrenshealthdefense.org. We have a free newsletter that'll come to your inbox every day. We have a free streaming service that you can watch every day. We're doing science, we're doing litigation, and we thrive because of your support.
Absolutely. Well, Mary Holland, thanks so much for coming on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. That's the CEO of Children's Health Defense, Mary Holland. And talking about the importance of some of the issues that RFK Jr. is raising through his confirmation hearing and issues that he's been working on for over a decade. Folks, I covered this last week, but the the stats on America's health status are very indicting. And we've got to turn this thing around for our children and our grandchildren and for our own health as well, because according to Scripture, we're called to treat our bodies as temples, as living temples, so that we can serve and honor God, because after all, He is our Creator. So that drives this topic.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.